Welcome back to Siren Radio with me, Jamie Rose. Now, I have the absolute pleasure to present not only someone that I absolutely admire, but near enough idealistic Radio X presenter, Dan O'Connell, host of the evening show and a man who I am envious of, not because of what he does is his job on Radio X, but the fact that he's actually spoke to Noel Gallagher. How are you, mate? Are you all good?
Jamie, what an introduction.
but it deserves a massive introduction. You know, evening show, Radio X, you've been on the air since, what, for the last 13, 14 years. It deserves a massive introduction. You know, especially with all the people that you've met. And, you know, I'm just envious of that more than anything. but are you all good this morning?
Really good, mate, too. Thanks for calling.
No, thank you for coming on. Really do appreciate it. Where does radio start with you? I know you, was it at Leeds University where you attended, or was it, you know, what was formerly Capital? Where does it kind of begin with you, your radio journey?
I guess the simple answer is I was about 9 years old and I just became obsessed with the radio. You know, I'd listen to it on the way to school with my mum. I'd listen to it every day in the holidays as a kid, and I think by the age of 13 or 14 I decided that is what I was going to do, and I sort of became very single-minded and stubborn about getting on the radio. So I'm really lucky that, you know, from the age of 9 I kind of knew what I wanted to do with my life and what I wanted to sort of focus on, and that became my North Star. You know, from a really young age I just worked towards it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've been doing it for so long. I mean, was it a case of when you did attend Leeds University and kind of the student radio kind of scene, was that something that you immediately gravitated towards as soon as you kind of started your studies?
No, not really, actually. The truth is, I started when I was 18 at Viking FM in Hull, which, of course, is just across the Humber from you. And I started with a duo at the time called JK and Joel, and Joel is now on Breakfast at Rock FM in Preston. JK is now doing Heart Drive Time with Kelly Brook, but they were together at the time as a duo in Hull, and I just became their sort of stunt boy, their little assistant, and my name was Camp Dan, and I sort of did little things for them. I'd go out around, you know, Yorkshire and Lincolnshire and, you know, give out bacon butties at the roundabouts, or I'd do sort of, you know, on the spot travel or do some flyers, or, you know, I'd do silly stuff with them basically. Just I was working for free as their assistant, and I'd go in at 5 o'clock and do the show with them, and then I'd spend the day in the office just learning radio, you know, everything, marketing, events, production, everything. I just spend the whole day there. So I was kind of, you know, I was in the radio station like 12, 13 hours a day from the get-go. And interestingly enough, I don't hold this as a grudge anymore, but for a long time I did. When I got to Leeds Uni in 2000, I'd started at Viking in the early summer, May, June. And I got to my first year of uni in the September, and then went straight to the radio station, was like, I'm obsessed with radio. I've been working in radio. Do you know what I mean? I know what to do. They just said, no, you can't have a show. And I was like, sorry, what? I just told you that I've been working on a professional station. So, you know, probably know a lot more than these people that you've given a show to. And they were just like, no, we've given out all the shows. So I was like, And they were like, come back next year. So even in my second year, when I went back, I still didn't get a show. And it wasn't until my third year at LSR where I got a show and, you know, we won some awards. At the time, we didn't have a 24/7 station. I know, see, most radio stations in, you know, the SRA bandwidth are 24/7 these days, aren't they? And at the time, we only had RSLs, which were restricted licenses for a month. So what you did is twice a year, you had 30 days broadcast and you spent, you know, 5 months sort of working towards this 30-day broadcast and then the next 5 months building up to the next one. So you were only on air for like 2 months a year. And I just loved it. I absolutely loved it. And what that did was in that third year, like I said, I did the two RSLs at LSR. I hung out with everybody all the time and I had the best time, and we'd go to parties and we'd drink and we had the roof terrace at LSR, and, you know, it was a great time. It was a really good time. And then I won, I think it was silver I actually got at the SRAs for the Drive Time show. And then I got a demo from that and I sent it out. And it just so happened that there was two places that wanted to offer me a job, and that was Viking FM in Hull. By honestly, like, I didn't even know the boss at this point because I'd been working at Radio Air and doing a bit of Key 103. And Radio Air were sort of saying, well, you know, come and do some more trials here. So I just took, I think it was 35 quid a show, two weekend overnights in 2003. And that was my first sort of paid solo show back in Hull. You know, I was on 70 quid a week and I couldn't have been happier. I mean, I had to move into my mum and dad's house. I still had a massive student loan to pay off. But I would go in and spend every spare second that I had just in the studio, you know, beavering away. Cass, who's now the boss of Virgin Radio, actually, got in touch with me and said, I've been listening to you and do you want to meet for a coffee? So I went to meet him for a coffee and he said, we've got some shows coming up. Do you fancy taking on a show at Galaxy? And I was like, absolutely. I mean, I was massively into music. 1998, I bought my first set of 1210s. Which are decks, for anyone interested, vinyl decks. And so I've been learning to mix for a long time. And, you know, I sort of aspired to be a club DJ. And, I went there. And I think I went there. And at the time, they had this job called Swing, which isn't as sexy as it sounds. Because Swing is basically you're paid full time, but your job is to cover everyone's holiday and do weekends. So sometimes you work for like 4 or 5 weeks straight, 7 days a week, and sometimes you just do 2 days a week for a couple of months. I mean, it's just how it is. But within a few months, they offered me afternoons. So I got straight into the swing of Swing, and then very soon after, I was on a full-time show doing afternoons and then moved to Drive. And I did Drive there for about 3 years.
And that, yeah, and then it all ends up kind of coming together. I mean, you've been at once again a full name change again from Galaxy to Capital, then you go from XFM to Radio X. You've been at there since 2010. So how does was it owned under Global at the time? Is that the case, or was it just a case?
I mean, Global had XFM from when they started out in 2007. I think it was 2007 when Global started with Ashley Table King and Steve and Myra and Richard Park at the time.
Did you want to, obviously it's a massive thing to kind of be on Galaxy and or Capital or Galaxy at the time. Was it a case of though XFM was where you wanted to head because of the indie music? Was that maybe something that you were looking at, or was it just anywhere that would give you a mic and give you a chance to, you know, be yourself live on radio?
Well, not really. There was two things to it. One, XFM was a national station. So, you know, it was a bigger opportunity. And I guess secondly, it had the potential for me to round off my career, because I suppose on Galaxy, you know, at the time, the strapline was number one for dance and R&B. So we were playing like dance music, R&B music, but predominantly we were playing club music, you know. And this was the early days of Calvin Harris and David Guetta.
Yeah.
The Swedish House Mafia was still, you know, just coming out of Stockholm as individuals. You know, Axwell, I remember Axwell playing I Found You to us for the first time, and, you know, I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then he's like, oh, you know, you should check out my friend Steve. He's got some really big tunes as well. And, you know, along came Steve Angela. So it was that real sort of like moment in dance music where these big commercial DJs now,
yeah,
were sort of just starting to bubble, really. And you could tell they were going to be big, but obviously no one knew what was going to happen with dance music. But what I thought I needed to do was not only just go and experience XFM and go and experience London, because that was an exciting thing to do, but I thought if I went there, I could sort of round off my musical knowledge and my musical kudos, really. Because, you know, I like all forms of music and I still listen to everything. And I didn't want to be pigeonholed as just this kind of dance music DJ. I thought I needed to sort of round off my musical credentials, essentially. So, I mean, there was a lot of reasons why I did it. But it was exciting, and I loved XFM. I was obsessed with XFM. I was obsessed with the fact that Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant and Carl Pilkington were there. You know, Jimmy Carr had done shows, and it really was a cool brand. Like, that was the thing. XFM was always voted as a cool brand, and it really was in the noughties, like this, you know, really cool thing. Commercially, it wasn't very successful. You know, it never made a lot of money. It certainly didn't make anywhere near as much money as Radio X does as commercial business, as a, as an entity. But it had the perception that XFM was cool. You know, Zane Lowe had that massive, massive leap from XFM to Radio 1. And, you know, he had the credentials, you know, because the music industry thought that XFM was the place that made DJs like that.
It was a massive kind of cool, clicky way to be, wasn't it? Like you say, with Steve Merchant, Ricky Gervais, I think Vernon Kay had been on at that point, Zane Lowe had been on it. There was loads of people that were very much kind of coming through. It was like, if why are you not doing it? Because of all kind of the big names that were coming through. And it was very clicky in that way, I think, in the early days.
I mean, I don't know about clicky, but I think that there was an element of, in my opinion, there was an element of all the brilliant writers, all the brilliant presenters, comedians, etc. They'd all been on XFM, and you sort of, I don't know, I guess you can just hope that you get some of that sort of magic dust just by association. Yeah. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to stop trying, but, you know, it puts you on the same ballpark.
Yeah, you're that's what I mean by clicky, in terms of like, in terms of being around the show business, because of like the comedians and all that that was doing it. And then there's, you know, some lad that's done, you know, Viking, and suddenly you're in the midst of it as well. That's what I kind of, you know, mean in terms of, you know, being like with the XFM in the early days.
Yeah, I mean, that was exciting for me. Of course, it's like, you know, it's yeah, it was an amazing proving ground, XFM, for a lot of people. And I was just grateful to get that opportunity to go and try it myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all the shows, you've done Overnights, you've done Breakfast, I mean, you've done Drive Time on Radio X, you've done 3D Afternoons on Radio X, and now you're on the evening show. What is probably your favourite show to present on radio, and why?
Different reasons. It depends what you want. I mean, obviously, I'm kind of a solo jock, so I've never had a team around me. I do pretty much everything by myself. The most interesting show I think you can do as a solo jock, in my opinion, is the evening show. You know, you get a lot more guests, you get a lot more competitions. It flies by. You know, if you're doing like a Friday or Saturday night as part of that, you can make it much more fun. The music's more upbeat. You can tweak it and curate it for more of a weekend vibe. And like, if you're young and single, you know, you're on air 7 till 10 and you can go out at 10 o'clock and still have a life. You know, and so you get to enjoy best of both worlds. And then the other brilliant time to be on the radio for me is, you know, 4 till 7 Drive Time. Because, I mean, that's mainly what I've done, you know, when you add it all up over the years. Because, again, you get your whole day to yourself, and then you go on 4 till 7 and there's all sorts going on, from traffic and travel. You've usually got features. You'll get the occasional guest. You do probably get as many as maybe Breakfast or Evening do. And then, you know, for me, it was like I was always straight out. I mean, at Galaxy, when I was doing Drive, I'd go and I was DJing 2-3 times a week. So I'd then, you know, maybe go and grab some food and then go out, or, you know, I'd go to a gig. And then as soon as I moved to XFM, I mean, I was out 7 days a week. You know, we were watching shows. You'd be invited to parties and stuff like that. And, I mean, it's an incredible life. Do you know what I mean?
Was that quite a sudden shift
then? You can only dream of.
Yeah, was that quite a sudden shift then for you to kind of be involved in radio? Then suddenly it becomes an element of kind of showbiz and glamour and fame in a way. Is that quite a weird shift to come across, or did you find it slightly more adaptable with your lifestyle?
No, not really. I mean, I think it's like, look, all that stuff is exciting. Anyone who says it isn't is lying. They're talking absolute BS, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's heady and it can be addictive. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I understand why people get addicted to that. You've got to remember, it's not real. It's certainly not an everyday experience. And I think as long as you go in with a grateful heart and just enjoy every single second and remember that it isn't like, you know, it's not a normal life, let's say, yeah, then you're always going to be okay, because you're not going to get sort of lost in the showbiz of it.
You're not going to get sucked
most of the
in,
people that I know have had a little, you know, they've had a little moment with it where you either get bored of it because it's like the same thing over and over again, or you just kind of take a little step back and go, I've had my fun. I enjoy that, you know, I enjoy it, and I'll still go out now and again. But, you know, there's more to life than just sort of, you know, going out and being a hedonist, essentially, on a daily freebie. You know, you quickly tire of that, and it's, and like I said, it's not good for your soul after a while. You know, it's tiring. It's repetitive, and you know, you'll see people. People will still try to be kicking the arse out of it years into it, and you can see it's not working for them. They're not happy.
They're just trying to kind of make it in a way.
They think one day if they just go to another party, it'll be like that first party they went to 10 years ago, and it's not. Do you know what I mean? And that's the other thing is, like, I think there's an element of keeping stuff special, and, like, you know, you can go to a nice restaurant every night. Yeah, you'll quickly get bored of it. You know, I don't know what I'm asking. You know, you just it's just always the same. If you went on holiday all the time, I know I'd get bored of it, but I love going on holiday.
You have to take a moment to you have to have a moment to come out of it, to go back into it, to appreciate it, type thing.
Of course, 100%, and that goes for the same across the board in life. Do you know what I mean? It just so happens that, you know, what we're talking about here is the sort of, you know, the more glitzier, the more glamorous side of life. You know?
Of course, just before we shift away into something more personal for you, I just want to ask you a couple of questions. Of all the people that you've worked with over radio, on all the stations, I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions of who do you think fits the category of this most? So, who do you think is most likely to swear on live on the radio? Out of all the people that you know, who do you think is most likely to do that?
Johnny Vaughan or Chris Moyles?
That you know what, that seems quite right. There's a few where Chris Moyles has kind of got away with it, hasn't it? Johnny Vaughan not so much. I've never heard Johnny Vaughan swear on the radio. I can't say.
No, I don't think that Johnny's normally quite aware, but Johnny is such a quick thinker.
Yes.
So quick. I can imagine one day he'll forget that he's on air and trip up.
Yeah, absolutely. To forget that they're actually scheduled to do a show, or forget that they're on air.
Toby Tarrant.
You know what? I was gonna say that. I was thinking Toby Tarrant. I was of all the things that Toby Tarrant does, I was thinking it could be Toby Tarrant. Go to emergency tape by accident.
Toby Tarrant or me, probably.
Mess up an artist's name.
Anyone can do that. I mean, look, I think if you spend enough time on the radio and you spend enough time listening to other people, you realise you will never get something right 100% of the time. There are times when I can just observe myself where my brain-mouth connection just isn't there, and words start coming out weird and you trip over stuff. I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. And it happens in real life as well, you know. So it's what you... It's the story you tell around that about whether it matters or not, because it used to matter a lot to me and now it just doesn't. Now I just let myself make the mistakes, because as soon as I started having kids, I was so tired all the time, and I still am. You know, those trips come, those mistakes come, and I just let myself go. I just let myself go with that now. It's, you know, everyone makes them, and I'm never going to get it 100% right.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've messed up so many acts names. I've just been like, I've gone through full interviews where, and God bless them, they've never ever corrected me. They've been so nice, but like, it's afterwards, and I've just been like, oh, I've messed up that name, and it like really winds me up. But I suppose you're like, you know, it's quite nice to kind of have someone go, you know, that's a professional that does it, and go, you know, let yourself go, embrace the kind of mistakes. That's quite nice, considering, you know, I'm, you know, where you was years prior, you know, kind of making your way through radio and wanting to do it kind of full time, etc. But it's nice to kind of have someone that does it professionally to be like, you know, it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to, you know, if you stumble over your words, and just, you know, you've got to embrace it, type of thing. So that's quite nice to hit, I must admit. And I can't lie to you, I was slightly stumbling over my words just to think, oh my God, I've got Radio X, oh my God, I've got Dan O'Connell, who does the evening show, I've listened to him so many times, oh my God, I just wanted to interview him for ages, and just stumbling over my words, so so that's quite nice to kind of hear. So, just kind of go away from the radio for a little bit. What was your first record that you remember buying or being in love with?
Michael Jackson, Bad.
It's not a... Why Michael Jackson, Bad? Just because it was so popular, or was there something that just...
Well, yeah, I mean, it was the 80s and everyone was listening to Michael Jackson, you know. I don't listen to Michael Jackson that much anymore, but, you know, that it was of the time. It was, you know, it was the album. The other song that I was obsessed with was Sunita, Mountaintop. I love that song as well. I mean, my mum and dad say the first 12-inch single that I ever went mad to was New Order, Blue Monday.
You know what? I thought it might have been. When I asked this question, I thought it might have been, you know, a Joy Division or a Blue Monday or a Stone Roses, perhaps, you know, something along those lines. I thought it might have been that instead of Michael Jackson. So I was slightly surprised that he's Michael Jackson. I can't lie.
Well, the other one that my mum and dad always remind me of is that I was obsessed with Culture Club, Karma Chameleon. And apparently I made them try and buy me this as a baby. Like, I was upset. They had to buy it to sort of like stop me annoying them. So they bought it on a little, I think it was a little 7-inch. Little 7-inch vinyl.
Oh, nice. Yeah, okay. So, first record, what would you say is your favourite album of all time? Is it Michael Jackson's Bad, or is it another album?
I think just for its sort of like, I think for its moment in my life, probably Arctic Monkeys, Whatever People Say I Am, That Is What I'm Not.
Yes.
It was at that perfect time for me. I just left uni, you know, I was going to a lot of shows, and I was in Hull at the time, and I remember my friend, who was on Hallam FM at the time, and he was called Phone Boy, Matt Jagger. Matt calls me up, and he's like, Dan, I've got to check out this band. Everyone's going crazy for the Arctic Monkeys. You've got to have a listen to them. Because we were both doing new music shows on both Hallam and Viking at the time on a Sunday night. And he sent me this CD, and it had a couple of tunes on it. I can't even remember what the tunes were on it at the time, and I was just like, wow, this is great. It just felt really exciting, you know, and...
I became
obsessed with that.
Yeah, I mean, it still sparks whole kind of... I mean, I'm nearly 21, and it's still, like, it's my favourite album of all time. So it just goes back years and years, and, like, it's mental to think that you're approaching nearly 20 years of that album first coming out, and it still has the same kind of cultural impact, I can't lie. I'm pleased that you've said Arctic Monkeys, Dan, I really am. What do you say is your favourite album of all... Of all time, maybe Arctic Monkeys, but what is it right now, would you say?
Oof.
Is it the new Rolling Stones?
I tell you who I think is releasing a lot of good music in terms of volume. And, and in terms of, like, I call them repeat offenders, not because they're criminals, because I think you've got to look out for the repeat offenders in life. Who keeps doing the business? Fred again keeps dropping bangers. And, you know, it's like...
Absolutely.
There's hardly a bad song in his back catalogue, and we're not that deep into it yet. I'm sure he's got a lot more work to do and a lot more work to release.
Have you seen him live? Have you seen Fred again live?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, he's incredible. Do you know what I mean?
He's a great artist to see live. From what I've not had a chance, but I'm dead excited to see him if I ever got the chance.
Yeah, I mean, he's managed to sort of. To find a way to be a performer and not just a DJ. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, for the most part, DJs are just standing behind their CDJs playing their tunes, which is absolutely fine. I'm not critiquing that or criticizing that. Mm. But he's just found that other way to do it. Which, you know, look, he wasn't the first to do it. I'm not saying that. You know, there's plenty of people who've done it before. But I think in terms of a really high level of commercial success like he's had globally, you know, it's nice to see someone doing something a little bit different, a little bit extra, because you can see the amount of work that takes to do. Do you know what I mean? He's still practicing minutes before he goes on stage.
Yeah, and kind of he produces with Ed Sheeran as well, doesn't he? So not only not only his own music that he kind of has. Yeah,
that's how he got. Look, it's not about, I'm not questioning his musical ability, but you've got to remember he's been producing people's songs and albums for years.
Yeah,
background working, and that's how he's got this great reach, and people love him and respect him because he's admired by all these incredible artists that he's worked with. And so that's probably helped him get access to the people who feed. And like I said, you can see the amount of hard work that
I mean, you've kind of answered the question anyway. A band of artists that I was going to ask, a band of artists that you think people should be listening to, is Fred Again the act for you?
Or is there someone else that you think? Planet Earth are listening to Fred Again by now. I tell you what, one of my favourite new bands of this year are actually a spin-off of the Maccabees, 86 TVs. So the White Brothers, who were in the Maccabees, have been working on a new album for 7 years since the Maccabees split up, and that's going to come out next year. But they've dropped a couple of tunes from that, which I really, really like. And I'm a massive Maccabees fan anyway, but this is excellent. And I really hope that goes well for them next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Going back to the radio, is there anyone that you've ever had come in or you've met in the kind of music or radio business where you've been a little bit took back by seeing them? Is there anyone that's kind of got you a little bit starstruck? Like I spoke to your colleague Sophie Svensson, who does Radio X Shield, and she said it was Dave Grohl from Foo Fighters. Specifically said that she would lick his face. So if you do see Sophie, say that is a quote that she has said on the radio.
I will do, yeah.
But is there anyone that's took you a little bit back?
Look, there's loads of people. I think when I started, like, I always remember this. Like, I was absolutely glued to the floor. In 2007, Daft Punk were touring the world with this pyramid show. And every show they did was a lockdown backstage where they cleared the whole area. And we were doing a live radio show, so we had a AAA pass. So they basically made everyone leave this area, but we had AAA, so we could stay there. And me and my friend Duncan, he was producing me. And we stood there in this backstage area outside a porter cabin and just watched Daft Punk come out by themselves, just both of them, Thomas and Guy. They came out fully dressed as Daft Punk. And they came out of this porter cabin, and we were just like, me and Duncan, face to face with Daft Punk, face to face. I mean, it was like, for us, we just couldn't believe it. I mean, like, it makes me sort of almost shiver now. Like, it was just... It was some sort of otherworld experience.
It was a moment caught in time as you're seeing Daft Punk face to face with you.
Yeah. And it was just, there was no one else there, just me and Duncan literally stood face to face with Daft Punk, and then they just sort of walked off in their robot suits to the stage. And
oh, what? There's like no...
That was amazing.
What? So there's no like produce... There's no people that are
no,
like...
No, they didn't have anyone with them. They had no one with them. They just obviously... Maybe there was someone in their porter cabin with them. I don't know. But there was no one there apart from us, and they just like looked at us. Kind of, we were almost toe to toe with them, and we were just like, no one said a word. They just looked at us, like in their full outfit, and we looked back at them, and then they just walked off. I mean, it was surreal. But
was
it
not
like
Was it not like a quick like kind of British nod, like, you all right, mate, type thing? Was none of that going?
It was almost like, I don't know. It was like some sort of weird sci-fi film where we kind of acknowledged our robot overlords, and you know, we just couldn't believe we were having this sort of other world experience. I imagine it's what people feel like, you know, when they say they've been face to face with aliens or something, because that's kind of what it felt like to me.
Oh, unbelievable! That's an ace story as well. I'll go on. I mean, you, Dan O'Connell. And festivals, how much do you enjoy? I mean, you've said about, like, kind of when he was doing XFM and all that, and he was just doing gigs, especially when you were younger. I mean, how much do you enjoy, even now? I mean, you've done, like, kind of Royal Blood and Noel Gallagher on Brighton on the Beach. I mean, you always seem to be there, always at these big kind of gigs. I don't know if you was at Nebworth or anything like that, but you always seem to be kind of there. And I know it's probably pitted up because of, you know, having kids and that maybe disrupts that. But how much do you enjoy going to, like, a festival or a live gig of that magnitude?
I mean, it's fantastic. It's really in my lifeblood. It's like, you know, you asked earlier on about what's the best show to do. And I do think in terms of you, in talking pure radio and you're talking about the craft and making and creating, then evening shows, 100%. But, you know, the downside is, like, I haven't really seen that much live music since I started the evening show on Radio X. So there is that kind of element to it. Like, you know, I don't get to see it, especially Monday to Friday. But obviously with festivals and stuff, I can still do that. And we are so lucky in the UK. Our festival scene is massive. You know, when you speak to any American artist, especially Americans, and they are just so proud for the UK and their festival scene. Like, they're just like, you guys need to cherish it and nurture it because you don't know how lucky you are, you know. And we are so fortunate in the UK to have this amazing thing that happens every year, where we all just, you know, go to fields and hang out for the weekend and see our favorite bands, artists, DJs, and hang out with each other. And, you know, sometimes get wet, sometimes get sunburned, but always, you know, always have a great time. And
for an entire summer, pretty much, consistently. Exactly, that is our summer kind of period, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's in my blood. You know, that's kind of, that's been part of my life now for 25 years almost, you know. And for me, like, I see it as a rite of passage. It is a rite of passage for a lot of people. I know not everyone likes festivals, but, you know, I took my kids to Camp Festival last year and they absolutely loved it. And they were, what, 2 and 3 at the time. So, you know, that was like, even there, I could see that there's the sort of, there's a spirit within festivals that's, you know, fascinating to a 2-year-old as much as it is to a 20-year-old who's going for the first time. It's, you know, it's kind of magical, you know, it really is, because there's always stuff to see and there's always stuff to do and people to hang out with. And at the same time, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to, but there is if you want to do something. And
I do agree that it is a rite of passage, though. I do completely agree with that. I've done a fair few of them, whether it's like the day ones or like I've done 5 days in a row with Leeds Festival in 2021. It does feel like that rite of passage in whatever you do. There is something magical about it. You are quite right in that.
Yeah. I just think we're really lucky, you know, at the end of the day. We're really lucky that we've got all of these festivals in the UK. And we've had them for a long time, you know. So yeah, I mean, I love them, and I hope that I'm still going to them in 20 years' time, and I'm sure I will be.
Yeah, absolutely, and I hope you are, and you're doing all these amazing interviews that you do, because they are fascinating to listen to. Just before I let you go off, Dan, thank you for your time, by the way, really do appreciate it. What advice would you give to someone trying to get into radio, or just presenting in general, from someone that has done it for 25 odd years and such longevity? What advice would you give to somebody?
I mean, look, it's the same thing I've been saying for 20 years, because it's the best advice I ever heard. Every sportsman ever says the more you practice, the luckier you get. Now, when I say to people that this takes hard work, I don't actually mean it's hard work. What I mean is it's lots of practice. You know, every single person on the radio who's great at the radio has practiced their craft, just as any musician has, as any sports person has, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the idea of 10,000 hours to master something. Well, all right, start doing 12 hours a night. You know what I mean? Do 12 hours a night for a year, and within 3 or 4 years, you've mastered it. Do you know what I mean? It's about, I think, consistency, but it's about having the discipline to turn up and keep doing it. Because, you know, I've mentored people over the years who say they want to be a presenter, but as soon as you give them some feedback on a demo, you never hear from them again. And they just go off and, you know, you know they're certainly not on air, from my knowledge. But there's people who have stuck at it, who are great examples of that. You know, Jack Saunders is one of them on Radio 1. You know, Jack worked with me for a couple of years on demos, and we got him a show on X, and then he's gone on to do what he does.
Yes.
You know, Jack had the discipline to keep coming back and to keep practicing and to make the demo better, and he didn't take it personally. You know, it wasn't me criticizing him. I was saying, look, do this and do that and think about this. And, you know, he says the best thing I ever told him was that before you open the mic, just take a moment, take a deep breath, and compose yourself. And I still do that now, because I think it just kind of centers you a little bit more. It focuses you on, you know, what you're going to say. And it also, if you're feeling nervous or a bit angsty, or maybe you've had too much coffee, it'll also just try and settle off your nerves. Just one deep breath before you, you know, begin to speak. Kind of, it just helps you focus and just take a moment before you do a link. And then you can apply different energy to whatever you need for whatever it is you're trying to convey. Yasser is another good. I was talking to Yasser about this. Yasser Ranjit, he's on Capsule Extra Drive at the moment. You know, again, like, this was a long time ago. I mean, we're talking maybe, oh, when would that be? Probably 15 years ago. He was a student in Leeds, and he was from Manchester, and he came to Galaxy, and he was, you know, again, he worked really hard, and he just kept on going and going, and he's now doing Capsule Extra Drive. So, look, the advice is always the same. The more you practice, the luckier you get. I don't think it's more complicated than that. And you can apply that to anything. Here you go. Just accept that you're going to be rubbish at it for a while. You might be rubbish at it for months.
Yeah.
But in 6 months or 12 months, you're going to figure out a way. You're going to find the pattern. You're going to see what it is that's making you better, and you're going to do more of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for coming in. Really do appreciate the time. Dan O'Connell, Radio X, evening show. I mean, do I have to say any more? Doesn't even need mentioning for what kind of significance it holds. Really do appreciate you coming in, and usually I say, you know, best of luck with everything, but you don't really need it.
Hey, you always need a bit of luck, Jamie.
Always.
You always need a bit of luck.
Always. Anyway, thank you for coming in. Really do appreciate it, and hopefully to speak to you soon. Thank you.
All right, matey.
Cheers. Thank you.